Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Meet Seamus. He and his wife are driving in their new Citroën C5 Aircross SUV to her birthday dinner, which he forgot in a restaurant that she had to book. She married a cliché. This could be a very uncomfortable drive. Except the Citroën C5 Aircross SUV comes with advanced comfort seating and progressive hydraulic cushion suspension, making it a very comfortable drive indeed. Citroën. Engineered for comfort. See citroen.ie.
Welcome to the Dope Black Dads podcast, a place where we are changing the narrative and having progressive conversations about black fathers, as well as creating a safe digital space for the community. This is the Dope Black Dad podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison. We're back this week and I feel good today. I'm just going to talk about myself for a minute because myself is important. Self-care is important. This has been a tough time and I'm feeling good. I feel I've got my mojo back. Everyone that listens to this podcast regularly knows that I probably overworked myself for 10 months of the year, collapsed for 2 months of the year, and I feel like I'm back. I feel like my inner child is strong. Today, I'm over the moon specifically in addition to how I just feel about myself because I'm here with Oliver Wilson and Tyrone Williams. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How familiar are you with Dope Black Dads? Is this an introduction? Is this an induction? Is this a doctrination? Where are we with your understanding of what we do over here?
I'm a new dad. My little one's only a month old. And I believe...
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Joining the club. But yeah, I think during the Black Lives Matter kind of stuff in the summer, I think I came across some images, some photographs of Black Lives, Black Dads, and I thought that was quite inspiring. And then I must know people connected to you that kind of came up on my algorithm. And then I think I joined your Facebook group. I thought that was great. Then I was kind of deciding what it's going to be like to be a dad myself during this pandemic. And I kind of parked you guys in the back of my mind going, you know what, as a human, as a dad, and as an artist as well, I thought, you know what, I might actually try and connect with you guys on my journey. So it's just so funny how now I'm here.
So what's really interesting, the first thing is becoming a new dad is like the best experience. And I gush like you know how people gush when they see babies? When I see new dads, I have the exact same feeling because I know that feeling where you're just like, you go from being a man, you're in the world and it's all about you. And then it all pivots in a way where ultimately you become subservient to this person that you created and usually the person you created it with. And it really shifts and you do need support. And that actually was the like genesis of us creating our space is that we just wanted to hold each other while everybody else is holding other people. And so it's become a really useful space for that, to be honest. Tyrone, what about you? What's your awareness up? What's your journey into this?
Well, for me, I've literally only recently found out about this podcast. I found out through a contact, of course, who I was invited to the show by. Myself, I've been a father for just a little bit over a year. My son was born in January a year ago. Mm. So possibly the same month as yours, Oliver. I'm not sure. But 29th of January, so similar sort of month. And it's just been an incredible journey. Some of the sort of more challenging times. But, you know, where for the majority of people on this planet, you know, this past year has all been about COVID pretty much. But for me, this year has all been about Damian Marley Williams. Do you know what I mean? And that's what I'll forever remember it for. So I just feel blessed in that sense and privileged to be on this podcast with other like-minded people. So excited to chat to you guys.
No, thank you, man. Well, one of the things that's really loud to me at the moment is it feels very weighty. Because we know about the lockdown. We've been in it long enough to understand it and know that, you know, we can't. And there's a greater reason why. But this particular point, this juncture feels very heavy. It feels there's just been a lot of people passing away. There's just a lot of people losing jobs or not working or just not being their full self. And I think this is the weight of the legacy. The long term effect is now kicking in of what that will do. What's it actually been like for you guys, just as men first, but then specifically as fathers in terms of becoming fathers in the pandemic?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was as a man, I think you lose that structure, right? But not knowing. As an artist as well, my industry completely shut down, so I couldn't work. I kind of, I was on a roll, and I think just kind of everything stopping. I was like, whoa, okay, what do I think? But funny enough, and I don't want to go too deep, but I was already going through my own psychological kind of questions about being a black man in this space, in this country, in this industry, through my art. I often have played a lot of things that are quite heavy or emotionally taxing. And especially if it deals with race and stuff like that. So I was already unlocked on a journey of thinking, whoa, what do I think about myself? What do I think about the world? What are the types of stories and narratives that I want to be a part of or help grow? So I was already wobbled. So actually the lockdown allowed me to have a bit of stillness to kind of lean into that. But I think in my not knowing and my fear and going, why the hell am I going to have a baby during all this time? It's still mad. I wouldn't want to make it even harder. I think leaning into the hope, having somebody else, making it not about me and having some other person, some other young person to worry about. So I can't give up. I have to be on it. I have to be hopeful. Even if the BBC is telling me there's no hope, I have to be hopeful because this can't be it, the younger generation. And more so, what am I going to say when my young one or any young person asks us, well, what did I do? What did I think in the present? And it feels like everything was crumbling down. I think that drives me forward, and I think I'm growing from that.
Your industry was obviously decimated. So like National Theatre had to get rid of 400 jobs almost. We know that the theatre production world has completely gone to a stop. You know, what is that doing to the community? I know there's a lot of black people who are hugely affected. There are some people who are able to work because they've put some level of production on, but the people who are, you know, working in different roles are probably are not being booked for the same types of jobs in the same way. What is the impact on you?
I mean, I was personally very lucky. I was about to start, literally open a show at the National Theatre called All of Us. I was already quite lucky, and I was going from job to job in the theatre. So I actually was on standby, and I'm still on standby now to start again, touch wood, if the doors open. But that's a very lucky position because you've got the national, you've got the backing, you've got the money. Okay, to answer your question, I think the lockdown has highlighted the fractions of discrimination, racism, and stuff like that in terms of power. You know, I imagine a lot of organizations, black organizations, already found it hard to get funding. So you can imagine now when nobody's got funding, there's going to be a hierarchy system. What I've been made aware of is for producers accessing money, knowing how to move in those circles, the money circles, coming from the same educational background, so you know how to articulate yourself in the same way that sings to the people who've got the checks to green light your project. So it's great having people as actors on the forefront, but I'm interested in, you know, I'm a director as well, but I was interested in how do you get money. I was lucky to make a project during lockdown, and I got some Arts Council funding money, but that was through the help of another theatre company. But I'm interested in black artists from the bottom to the top, knowing how to move those circles. And I imagine it's been a massive culling of people. But, you know, at the same time, you've got the Black Lives Matter movement that picked up. Hopefully there should be a awakening in the consciousness. But we'll see if that's just kind of temporary. It comes down to power, from positions of power.
And yourself, Tyrone, in terms of, you know, you're a personal trainer, right? And you're a music producer as well.
Sure.
Your industry has also been hit pretty hard. Like, what how has that been for you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, both industries have been hit or impacted in different ways, I must admit. But first and foremost, I'll talk about the fitness side of things. So, you know, the fitness industry has been hit massively. That's clear to see. I mean, gyms, they've been one of the sort of the side, one of the industries which has sort of had to close for the majority of this pandemic, which is unfortunate. So that's made things really difficult, really challenging for gyms. The funding that they get to cover their costs whilst they're closed, you know, it may cover some of the rent. It may cover the rent for sure, but does it put, is it enough to put food on your family's tables and these sort of things? So that makes it very difficult for owners of gyms. Most of the staff members are furloughed, so that's fine. But when it comes to the personal trainers who are self-employed, that's a tricky situation because, you know, for self-employed people, and it's, that's across the board, they're getting sort of a smaller percentage of their general income today. So they're talking about, I mean, they're going to be living off what they were earning on average 3 years ago. So for some people, that might may have been quite a low income.
So what's really interesting, I think, is Humphrey Cobbard, he owns Pure Gym. And he's been saying that the lockdown has cost their business $120 million without getting any form of revenue in, which is insane. Yeah. I mean, and so they've announced that outdoor sports can restart on the 29th of March and gyms can open on the 12th of April.
Yeah.
Is that enough? Is that enough to save you and your business? Is that workable?
Up until last year, August, I owned a personal training studio in Brixton, just on the Acre Lane. That was up and running for about 3 years prior to August last year. But throughout the pandemic, the first lockdown, I kind of had to make some decisions about where I want to take the company, what's best for the company, how can I sort of reduce costs as much as possible. So for me, I've been quite fortunate because the steps I took last year when I closed my studio were steps to ensure that throughout, no matter what happens throughout the rest of the pandemic, I will be okay, if that makes sense. So what I did is I took all my fitness equipment, put it into storage for a couple of months. I spoke to a college on Brixton Hill, Southbank UTC. They have a gym there, which is quite a large gym, and it's very underused. None of the students were really using it. The teachers aren't using it. So I approached that college and we had a conversation about how I can help. I offered for them to basically trade services, whereby I will bring my fitness equipment, all the stuff that I've purchased over the years. So that's machines, cable machines, Smith machines, things like that. I'll install it in your gym to just complete and complement what you have already. And what I'll do is I'll train my clients there free of charge, so no rent. And in exchange, I'll come into the college 5 days a week from this hour to this hour, and I'll spend time working with your students and just basically helping them build their own fitness programs and just educating them on health and on diet and these kinds of things. Yeah. So that's put me in a position whereby even though we were in lockdown recently, we still are, I'm not making any money specifically, but I'm not forking out any money for my business. Yeah. There are no overheads in that sense. So I've been quite fortunate.
And I almost feel like the definition of blackness is to be able to pivot.
Absolutely. Like, absolutely. You've got to think on your feet, you know? You've got to think on your feet. And that's important in life.
We just don't seem to have the luxury of like, you know, creating something. Like even the idea that the guy from Pure Gym has lost 120 million. If I was losing 120,000 pounds, my life would be ruined. Like we just don't have that same level of flexibility.
Absolutely.
And I think
no.
There's something where I feel like the government supports and takes care of their own. And so large companies like that, they'll probably prop up in some different ways to support them because they see them as mass owners. But, you know, people like us, we're just trying to make sure. So that idea where your pivot is built in, like how would you speak to that? Because I think sometimes when non-black people meet us, they don't understand that we come already highly evolved because we've gone through 30 things to arrive at the level you understand. How would you communicate that?
How would I communicate that with someone coming from a different background that's sort of...
Yeah, like how could you break that down in terms of your experience? Like you know, coming from where you come from to like being that person. What does that actually take and what does it look like?
That's a journey in itself, isn't it? That's a whole journey. That's a life journey, isn't it? I mean, I'm not sure about you guys and what your background is educational from an educational perspective, but, you know, I left school at the age of 15. You know, I left no GCSEs, all of that. I was just had enough. But I see that in a lot of people because there are people who have an entrepreneurial mindset. And back in my day, I'm 39 this year, but back in my day when I was at secondary school, it wasn't an educational system that was hinged around, okay, we're going to find people who are academic and that's their thing. You know, they are organized. They're on time all the time. They pay attention all the time. They want to go to college. They want to go to university. They have this foresight into exactly their exact path. And then you have that other group, which was basically me. And other people you know. And we were people of more of an entrepreneurial mindset. And that educational system just isn't designed for us. Yeah. So because it's not designed for us, teachers in our day didn't really want to take the time out to try and guide us individually or as subgroups. And we were just kind of left to do what we were doing. And, you know, because of that, I just felt like school wasn't for me. I want to get out. I want to go and work and do what I want to do and create my own path from there. And that was the start of the journey. But it's a whole journey, you know, which you can try to explain to someone from a different background, from a more sort of traditional background. But whether they get it or not, I'll never know. You know, it's just one of those things.
How would you explain that sort of essence? Because it is, it's almost like a seasoning that you can't, it doesn't have a brand or a name. We just know, I know it in you and you know it in me. We know we just have it. And we just, I suppose, is that a good thing? Is that how it should be? Sometimes I can't tell. Like, I think
it's a good thing for the next generation. Maybe for not you personally and not for me personally, because we're kind of having to figure it out ourselves. But now yourself, you're on a platform where you can outreach to a younger generation who you sort of are cut from the same cloth as yourself, and you can sort of guide them better and give them more guidance than perhaps you had. Certainly more guidance than what I had, you know, because growing up without a father and all that kind of thing, you're just figuring it out for yourself. But it's down to people like us then to pass on that knowledge. And this is one of the reasons why I love working with young people. You know, I'm in a privileged position where I get to work with these youths, and I see a lot of them who have the same sort of mindset I had at that age. And I could see that if I don't sort of encourage them in certain ways and teach them certain things, certain values, then they may not last in that college, if that makes sense. Because I can see they've already got that entrepreneurial mindset. They already want out. They're just going because their parents are telling them to. But then it's my duty of care to say, look, that's cool. You can leave now, but what are you going to do? If that makes sense, what are you going to do now? You may as well hang around, figure out a few things, just do your education, learn as much as you can, do your best in your exams, but figure out what your passions are and where you will expend that energy going forward once you leave this college. And,
what's your understanding, Oliver?
I think you always have to have balance, but we can't forget. You never forget, because we are the kind of battle for equality or equity or justice is far from over. And I think you feel it, whether you're a millionaire and the only black person on the best street in London, or you're feeling it if you're in the ends where I'm from, like where my family are from, and you feel it on an estate and things like that. Like, and we're still in a white Western place trying to thrive in a society that's not built for people like us. And you can just look at that through all the metrics of any system in the world. So in one way, you're thinking, okay, you don't want to bring all that on your back, on your shoulders. You're just trying to hustle. You just want to be glad to get there, right? What we probably all have in common is that we can all work the room. You can kind of turn it on or turn it down, your so-called blackness, to be able to get on with people, because, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying that all people who are non-black don't get it and against us. It's a system ingrained in our education everywhere throughout. So you feel it no matter what. You feel it when you're in a five-star show and you've just smashed it at the National, and then you go to the West End, and then people come to celebrate with you afterwards. And though they mean well, you're like, hold up a minute. The only person that looks like me is behind the bar or watching the door.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. These people love me. They're lovely, whatever. But I'm switching that on. And I, too, am very lucky to go back to my dorms. And no matter what, the black students always come to me because they're struggling. They feel that struggle because you're forever having to move forward. And I think you can't forget. I think we've got a long way to go. I think we've got a long way to go. And it's not us. I can't help in terms of thinking about people in Africa, people in Latin America. My child is half Chilean, half Scottish, and black. My partner half Chilean and half Scottish, right? But it got me thinking, man. You know, you asked me about being a father. The complexities of not only being black when I was going through my own struggles at that time, but then I'm really fascinated about the African diaspora in Latin America. Completely different kind of like vibe, and in Africa here. So we can't just be here and go through our struggles in the West and then ignore the fact that horrific things are happening, and we're benefiting right now. This laptop is benefiting from the genocide in the Congo.
Yeah.
Do we need to not sleep every night thinking about it? No, but we have to represent.
So I have a question, because this is something that comes up in our groups all the time, and it's one of those things. Yeah. So like in our concept of blackness, we accept black and black mix as a universal inclusive term, and we're actually quite more liberal with it as well. I think that if you feel like you have a black experience, you know, we take it on case by case basis. We will try to make you more inclusive than not. But I think there is a thing in terms of diversifying even the ethnicities of our children and what that does. There's two things that really landed with me is that one of my children is a lot fairer than the other. And I think there is this, like, for me personally, when my oldest son was here, arrived, I couldn't see myself in him immediately. There was a slight disconnect for me personally. Maybe I had to really consciously get into the idea, because I think there's something about, you know, like when you see a lion gives birth and licks him, it's like, that's the affinity. It's like, oh, you're a lion, I'm a lion. But like, there's just that slight difference where you think, right, like, actually, it just took a couple more weeks to really like process, because his eyes were slanted. He came out very, very, very fair. And so it was just a bit different. And I think, Is there an affinity? And I don't think it's ever to say it's a good or bad or right or wrong. I just think it's like, when we're talking about the world ahead, because this is the latter point that you was getting to, what we're preparing our children for, does it even become even harder? Because ultimately they're a race that we're not. And how much awareness do I have about the mixed experience? Because my wife, my mother of my children is still mixed race. And so she has her own experience. She tells me stuff and I'm like, but it's true. Is sometimes I think the mixed experience isn't seen, and how fit am I to, you know, teach my children about the mixed experience? What are your thoughts on that, Oliver?
I think, well, we've been masters at trying to kind of work in a kind of white environment, a fairy environment. So we've seen that side of it. And I think what's interesting in the girlfriend's conversation, like talking to her, we have these conversations all the time about her being mixed heritage and having a mixed child. I think this conversation would be slightly different if you lived in the Caribbean and lived in Africa. So you're having that same complex conversation, but you're living in a kind of white society dominated by white people. Ultimately, I think you just have to be open and support them, but know that even though they'll have a slightly potentially easier time because of stupid caste systems, ultimately they're going to be seen as non-white anyway. So my girlfriend, who's white passing, in some places, he's always going to be seen as black, no matter what. And it's so interesting when you go to Cuba or other places like that, when you have 50 different types of shades, the complexities are even there more so. But yeah. I think I have to educate that and be open in all sides. But you can't forget, my man. You can't forget, and you need to represent your side, if you see it as sides, as much as possible. And so they can dip in and out and hold on to whatever identity that they choose.
What about you, T? In terms of like ethnicity, is your children, they look like you? Did you have that affinity when they first came?
Yeah, so I get what you're saying with that, you know, and it's something that was actually explained to me prior to me having my child. But so something that was, you know, I was kind of thinking about ahead of that. I wasn't sure if it is going to be down to because, you know, my child is mixed race and I'm black and that kind of thing. But I don't know. For me personally, it just felt more because, you know, those first few weeks, those first moments, he's going to be so attached to his mother, you know, and she's going to be so attached to him. And I'm so attached to him, but I've got to kind of just.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
take a little step aside and let them have their moment, if that makes sense, because he needs her more than anything, more than me at this current time. So I realize this is kind of, this is your time now, this first couple months. But once these couple months pass and little Damien starts to become more aware, you know, we're going to start connecting more. And it was after about 2 to 3 months that he and I started to really connect and I could really feel that bond. But you're right, I did feel it took a bit longer than I guess I first expected.
Yeah. But was it a factor for either of you, very quickly? Was it a factor in terms of like when you were choosing your... Because, look, when we talk about love and relationships, the simplicity is you meet someone and you just want them. You're like, yo, you are the thing. Yeah. And your mind is like focused. Yeah. And then after a while, you're like, oh, if we're going to do this, this means... You know, you start looking at their family and you're like, oh, what's your family? Right. Where'd you come from? Right. You know, like, what's your mum like? And we got to get along. How do you make food? Do you season? Do you wash your meat? Like, you know, you start asking questions about really important things. And then you get to the point of like, oh, I'm going to have children. And then it's like, oh, hold on a second. Because now, was that a part of the DNA? And where in the listing does it just not matter to you?
I'll be honest, man. It really didn't matter to me. You know, I've come from a background where my friendships, you know, all of that has been so diverse from day one. You know, you look at my collective of friends, they're all different colors from all different places around the world. And it's been like that from nursery, school, right the way through to this day and age. And over time, man, just race, it wasn't a factor for me. You know, I'm aware there's racism. I've had racial abuse hurled at me before. Mm. I've been in those situations. I've been to other countries where I feel uncomfortable. All of the above, but over time, I just realized, you know, what's most important is that you just love and care for people and have good times and just keep a good group of people around you that have no agenda, but to see you succeed and help you succeed. And I've been fortunate to have that. And when I met my partner, Krista, no sort of racial thoughts or tensions or issues came up. What was funny, though, because she's from Latvia. So I found this hilarious, but it reminded me a bit of the movie Get Out. And then I was a bit concerned going to Latvia for the first time because I met Krista about 3 years ago. So we've been together only a short while. We went to Latvia last year in the summer, August. So just after lockdown was lifted, we went out there, took Damien out there so he could meet the family and everything. But it wasn't really until earlier last year, like January, that I found out that her grandparents don't know that I'm black. And I was like, yo, Krista, like, how are you going to feel about this? You know what I mean? Like, she's like, oh, it's fine. Who cares? It doesn't matter what they think. She was on that vibe. You know, she didn't care. Like, they could think whatever they want. But I guess deep down, she knew they wouldn't have a problem with it. Because when I went over there, you know, they didn't even blink twice when they first saw me. It's just like, oh, guys, welcome. Hello, how are you? And it was just all natural. So I'm kind of lucky in that sense. But I see how it could have been.
The thing is, you know the dangers of what it could have been, though. You know the other side of that, where it would have been like, can't come in. Don't come in the door.
And they live in the countryside in the sticks. So when I say it reminded me of the movie Get Out, I just thought vividly of a moment when they're driving through the forest and I'm just thinking, where are we going? How am I going to get out of there? Shit takes a twist and a turn for the worst. Oh, mate. But to be honest, man, I've been lucky. I've been very fortunate. It's all been blessed. It's all been smooth. And I know there are issues out there where people have issues with interracial relationships and all that kind of thing. But do you know what? I leave that conversation to those people who feel that it's necessary to have that conversation. If you feel it's necessary to have that conversation, then you really need to have a conversation with yourself, is how I look at it. Because love is love. And that's what it is at the end of the day. And all I want is my child to be around happy people. And that's the be all and end all.
Yeah. Where are you at with it, with Oliver?
You know, this is a deep question, my man, because I thought for ages I didn't really think about it. Similar, like my parents, luckily my parents are still together and brought up in a very kind of diverse environment. I've had loads of mixed couples around me, so I've never had really a problem with that. I haven't thought about that. During drama school, my first 7 years as an actor, I never wanted to talk about race. I just wanted to do Shakespeare and not be doing yes, bruv, no, bruv, and stabbing someone for no reason, I would put it. I wanted characters with gravitas and the intellect and all those things like that. Did a play called Nine Night about Jamaican family in at the National. Yeah. Did
you see it? Can I just tell you, apart from the context of Nine Nights being like based on someone passing away, It's one of the most incredible experiences. It's high, low. It's learning stories. It's great food. You get to see family and friends. It just, it's a bit of a mind F because somehow Caribbeans have made this moment incredible and memorable and transformative, but also very, very sad. So it's a very Caribbean, it's the most Jamaican thing I remember. But yeah.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Well, I was very lucky to do a play all about that. Cut story short, like it smashed at the National, we transferred in the West End. But that profound experience doing something that connected with my own people, for my family to come see themselves on stage and all the wonderful things, black and white interactions that I had, that thing shook me up, man. It really made me think about the impact and just for the first time being directed by a black director. And for the first time. Nothing wrong with it. Nothing saying that it's better, but that shorthand, that difference. Mm. But to also have all the money, all the backing that you need. It wasn't like a lesser production. It was the best of its best. It earned its rights, but beautifully, unapologetically black. Man, it got me thinking about a whole heap of stuff. I've always been with a mixed group of women and stuff like that. I've never really had a preference. But the girlfriend before my mother, now my baby mother, who that's it for me, obviously, she was black. Right? Mm. I've been with black women before, but she was black, and I was with her at a time where I was going through some deep questions, man. I was going through some deep questions about the people around me, the industry around me, and learning loads about the plight of black women, and kind of understanding some more complexities by being with someone, being intimate with someone, to hear all the highs and lows about how they see themselves, and questioning whether do I prefer white people because of my conditioning?
Mm.
No matter what I say, Is am I just so happy to be in that white environment, to be at the National, to be the only person in the room? I'm so glad to be there. I don't even recognize that I have the psychological psychosis that's within myself, potentially. Mm. And I would argue at that time, at my lowest time, where I really just wanted to watch black stuff and think about my blackness, educate myself about ancient Egyptians and what's going on in my own history, I needed that shorthand. Nothing wrong with not having a white person, but I felt that deeply. I had those thoughts, what you're saying about having a black child. I sometimes listen to people that maybe would seem as more radical in terms of you should only be with black people because we need to bolster up our race. What's the point of moving out of the hood, so to speak, and then getting the white money, doing well, and then interacting with people not in your own generation, and they get watered down? And is it more likely that your mixed race kids will continue being a more of a white environment than a black environment? Those deep questions was there. But anyway, through love, it didn't quite work out with that person. And I didn't want to be with them because in the end, I wanted to be happy. You know, it had nothing to do with race. I wanted to be happy. And I found my partner because she was great. And I thought I could be happy with her. Yes, maybe her being Chilean, maybe not being fully English, probably has something to do with it. There's a kind of understanding about not being fully white in this society. So maybe I wasn't a massive Greek. But ultimately, I realized that I can't be the thing that I'm trying to change. If my child turns around to me and says that they're gay or they want to be with a Chinese person, if I say no to them, am I willing to say no to them? For what? To lose my son, to lose my child because I don't agree with what they're saying. Mm-hmm. I've spent my whole time fighting racism and then I'm going to say no on the principle of race myself.
Right.
I have to be the thing that I'm trying to change.
Sorry to compound this question, yeah, because we've gone down a rabbit hole, but we're here now, and I'm in the room with it, because this is stuff that, you know, my opinion on it has floated around. So historically, I would only have dated black women, specifically dark-skinned black women. That would have been my way of, you know, a tree, fruit from the tree of my mother, almost. And so that became really important to me. And then I felt like, you know, there was nothing wrong with that experience, but the ones that didn't work, I felt like I actually needed to express and understand what just connecting with people meant. So I've gone on different journeys of understanding, but the question that is usually proposed by those, we'll call them black extremists, is that fair? Is that they would say, then how do you preserve and consider yourself to be pro-black while not dating, you know, the women that we created, ultimately the original women of the planet? We don't date them, but then we say we're pro-black. Is that a conflict then? Is that a valid question, or is it just a cool point but not practical in terms of where we're heading? Because I think there's two different things. We're all like, we're a black platform, but it's about preserving the black people that are here. But then there is this question of like, but if we don't, and we're constantly mixing races, are we able to continue having a black community, because isn't everyone going to be mixed in four generations then anyway? Like, is there preservation in that, or is it just we're all going in this direction?
No, for me personally, it's more about helping that next generation. And okay, my partner isn't black, but that doesn't mean that I'm not pro-black. You know, a lot of the energy that I expend in trying to develop and help other people and mentor other people is spent with young black people, if that makes sense. So that's where I'm doing my part for the black community, to making sure that we can uplift ourselves and uprise ourselves and do the best we can in society and better ourselves in society. And I think that's every bit more important than ensuring that you have a black partner. Because for me, I don't see how that helps. Because if you're just going to be with someone just because they're black, but what if you don't get on? What if the love's not there? What happens in the future? You know, there's going to be that friction. You're going to have those fights. You're going to have those arguments, which therefore your son, your daughter then gets to witness. They learn these things from you. They become something like you. And then it's just a vicious cycle. But for me, man, the key is just always love and good energy, and the rest doesn't matter. That's it. It's literally as simple as that. I don't understand how we complicate things so much and so often, but help each other.
I think that's just a really beautiful message, because I think we never really understand. We know where we're trying to go, but I think sometimes the approaches of where we're going differ. And then if we change the approaches, we ultimately can change our goal as well. And we just get muddled into this cycle. Like, there are some people who are, you know, they're about protecting the black identity and the dark skinned black identity. And there are other intersections. There are other communities do this also. So this is not just unique to us. Mm. And there are other people that are a lot more open in terms of like the progression of humanity, and we can be able to just love each other. And the only way to do that is the more integration and mixing that we do, the more it becomes normalized. And, you know, soon there'll be like, every single white person or every brown person will have someone from another intersection or racial identity in their family. So it just closes the gap of these divides. And so I suppose that's where we're saying we're heading, right? We're saying collectively, like, we need to preserve our experience as black people now, but also be aware that, like, as we go forward, this will evolve into a point where potentially racism won't even be possible, because there'll be enough integration where that will be the majority over everything else.
It's inevitable, right? Surely.
Well, potentially, also some so-called extremists or other stats and science would be like, well, it's ridiculous. It's actually a fallacy to be like, black people will be no more, because it's often seen from a Western lens. There's a whole heap of people in South America and Africa, plenty of black people in the world. And in 4 or 5 years of time, it's going to grow. The population is going to grow anyway. We're just talking about finance and the growing of the middle class and having less children, but more people surviving for longer. There will be a growth in black people anyway. And some people will say, well, you have the overriding gene anyway. So if the middle class grow in the global south, some people, and maybe this is what some white elitists are fearful of, is that the more wealthy black people get, we have the overriding gene. So if they're not, they're definitely not going to get whiter. They're going to get darker. So that might be why people get going on their conspiracy theories about people trying to keep the black population down. So it depends on whose science, whose reference points. And that comes again to narrative. And that's what I love about this podcast, is shaping new narratives. We need to see the black families. It's not 100% true. There's more black people families together than there are broken down or people going with other races. We need to see that. And then, like, all critical thinking. I say this to my students, which I'm practicing myself. I'm a big believer in critical thinking and wisdom. Once you see all the information, then make an informed decision. And I think what you only see is because of money, you often just see the basketball player or the football player or the actor, dare I say, not with the race, but you don't see everybody else. You know, now if you want to talk about the rich area, and often you might see a black or mixed race couple, then fine, because that's economics. But around the corner on that estate, there's a whole heap of black families. There might be some people that are separated. There might be some black kids killing each other, but there's more black kids that are not. There's more great fathers out there. And that's what I'm inspired by this, is that we need to see that. We need to see that. But that's not interesting, because the people who are commissioning these stories are not black and don't have the experience to put that in front of mainstream media.
Yeah, that's powerful. I want to go back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of the impact, because I think it's important, and then I want to end on something. I think what's really important is that your industries have been impacted quite heavily from COVID. And I think there's almost like sometimes, you know, especially when the actors industry, in the theatre and the film production, there was such little care for such an important industry that really funds, like in West End, it funds a whole ecosystem of like bars and shops and fashion and all these different things that theatre creates. If there was a message to we'll say Boris for now, but you know, Boris, message to Boris, what actually is it that you would like him to understand or to say that he doesn't, that clearly hasn't landed amongst him and Rishi and Priti Patel?
I would say narrative is powerful, and I think we can see that the reason why mental health is an issue but isn't as bad as it should be is because people are relying on the TV and other narratives to keep them sane. And that, like you said, the arts industry is funding loads of other sub-communities, and there's loads of people that are seeing themselves through the arts, whether it's theatre or TV, that's helping them shape their narrative. A lot of people are not turning to BBC. They're not seeing themselves in positions of power other than the stories that we tell. And as humans, storytelling, passing on our stories, is what kept us alive. And I think they're not thinking about that. They're not thinking about there's loads of people in the education system that through the arts is how they thrive. How Shakespeare is amazing, but you have your own Shakespeare people in the music industry doing their own poetry. What is rap? So all this narrative comes in different forms, but doesn't come from the standard selected, often white male, middle class kind of way of doing it. That isn't the narrative that we need to be seeing. Far more complex than that. So art is dangerous, and every time you've had a revolution, dare I say, there's been a renaissance in art. It reflects, it echoes what's going on economically, politically. So it's a dangerous tool, man. What I find interesting is that a lot of actors with a lot of power are being very quiet because they're fearful getting too political, because what will happen? But the politicians done though. Look at Trump. Unfortunately, it's a massive example how they will use the arts to sway the people. And I would say you keep on pushing people, you keep on pushing the working class who often work in the arts. I reckon in 4 or 5 years, if they don't sort out the knock-on effect of lockdown, which again will disproportionately affect black people more, there will be an artistic revolution and a push forward, a demand for people to see themselves. And they've got to watch out because the internet is changing everything. YouTube and stuff like that, changing everything. You need to watch out, man. And I think they're going to censor it and they're going to block it down because they can't control that.
Yeah. What would you say, Tyrone? What's your dear Boris letter?
I agree with a lot of what you just said there, Oliver. And, you know, it's a concern where they're trying to lead, you know, the arts world and other sort of industries. And you can see it going that way. There's less and less jobs now. There's less and less opportunities for people in the performing arts industry. There's more and more competition on the music side of the entertainment industry, because now what you've got is you've got a load of people staying home with not much to do. So they're producing more music. They're submitting more music to whatever they're submitting music opportunities for. So it's a difficult time in that sense. And, you know, you have a government now saying to you, you should try to find other careers. You know, more standardized careers and things like that. And that's not a good message. That's not what we want to see, because like Oliver was saying about, you know, YouTube and restrictions and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's not a good look, because YouTube is a place for artists, performers to express themselves. So if in a time like this, you're going there to try and gain viewers, to grow your business, to grow your popularity, but then, you know, you're getting this platform in particular that you're using to try and grow is then trying to restrict what you can do and how much you earn and all these kind of things. It just concerns me with where our governments are trying to direct us in the future, basically. I just feel like they're trying to put us all into one sort of box and have a society where we're kind of all earning a similar sort of income. We're not, you know, you're sort of diminishing the chance of getting, say, the next Elon Musk or the next, you know, John Boyega and things like that. And I just feel like, you know, that's the sort of bleak future that they prefer us to have, because that helps that so-called 1% club to keep, you know, their sort of level of power and all these kind of things. I'm going somewhere else with this, but, you know, I don't want to get too deep into it. But it concerns me where our governments want us to go and the restrictions that they're putting on us. And I just think that, you know, for people out there who are struggling with mental health, just stay true to yourself. You know, keep working on your art, keep trying to grow yourself as a human being and all these kind of things. And eventually, you know, things will come good for you. And just use this time wisely, you know?
Guys, thank you so much for coming and joining me, man. It means a lot. I really appreciate your thoughts. I think the most important thing, and I think to take away, just, you know, the arts have been quite heavily impacted. You know, health and fitness is fundamentally important for people's mental health. But, you know, these businesses, these people, you guys need real support. And I think it impacts, you know, usually Black and brown people significantly more because we're in those spaces, usually on the front line or with small to medium sized businesses. And so we get impacted by these things a lot more. And it's, you know, it's just not really good enough. I think it's another question. We probably should have another conversation about what it is to move to another territory, because it's been a common conversation. Like, I'm in South Africa right now. And it's a whole different ballgame. You know, being here where Black is default is a whole another world. And I think it's really empowering and freeing when that's the case. And I think we can, you know, you can help build other powerful nations if you're not appreciated where you are. But guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today, and we'll definitely thank connect you. Again and I'll make sure we're in touch by the end of the day.
But bless you guys.
Thank you.
And so thank you guys for listening. I really much appreciate it. We'll be back next week with another episode. You can find us at Dope Black Dads on all social media platforms. You can also email me for a chat at hello@dopeblackdads.com. Thank you so much for listening, my brothers. I appreciate you all. We'll be back next week.
Every day you trust your gut, and that gut feeling can lead to a kick in the guts, but your gut instinct was right, so you bust a gut because someone will have your guts if you don't. You know what your gut deserves? Glenillan Farm Yogurt. Breasting with live cultures, it's the daily way to keep your gut happy and healthy, and tastes delicious to boot. Choose Irish, choose local, choose Glenillan Farm.
Meet Seamus. He and his wife are driving in their new Citroen C5 Aircross SUV to her birthday dinner, which he forgot in a restaurant that she had to book. She married a cliché. This could be a very uncomfortable drive. Except the Citroen C5 Aircross SUV comes with advanced comfort seating and progressive hydraulic cushion suspension, making it a very comfortable drive indeed. Citroen. Engineered for comfort. See citroen.ie.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.